Frederick Forsyth has been writing extraordinary real-world novels of intrigue for more than 40 years, from the groundbreaking The Day of the Jackal to The Kill List. Now, Frederick Forsyth tells the story of his own remarkable life, filled with events that in many cases inspired his 15 novels. His new book is The Outsider, My Life in Intrigue. It is published by Putnam. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Frederick Forsyth to the roundtable this morning. Freddie, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe.
At what point did you know that you wanted to write a memoir to take a look at your writing life?
Pretty recently. I thought actually the last novel, The Kill List, would be the swan song, and I didn't want to write starchy autobiography. And it wasn't even my publisher or my agents that talked me into it. It was, I think, just a group of friends. I decided to write it, if at all, as a memoir, meaning what you remember, and in the style of just sitting around the table when the wine has flowed and people just chewing the fat, shooting the breeze, and talking about the old times. And I just tell this story in anecdotes. So it's not really a book full of chapters. It's just 52, 53 anecdotes, just things that happen, some short, some bit longer than that, but nothing particularly long.
The subtitle of the book is My Life in Intrigue, and I said this is your writing life, but this is much more than that. And at what point in your life, certainly given your time in the service and in the Royal Air Force, did you think, okay, I would like to be a writer? That is something that I would like to do.
Well, that's one of the weird things. I never did. I'm probably the least likely successful novelist, because most of them, I know a few, and they all had this impulsion to write, and I didn't. I started off with crazy about airplanes as a boy, wanted to be a pilot in the Air Force, got that. Then I wanted to travel widely, so I became a foreign correspondent in order to do just that. I never really thought, hey, I'm going to write fiction one day. That happened as a fluke. I just came back from the Nigeria Biafra War in 1970, and I was broke, completely, without a job or prospect of a job. I didn't have an apartment. I was sleeping on the sofa of a friend, and thought, well, what the hell are you going to do? I'm trying to make some money. And I hit on the stupidest idea of trying to make money, which is, of course, to write a novel, because the chances are it won't be published. I mean, it's 100 to 1. I didn't know that. I was too naive. And there's 1,000 to 1 it'll ever be a blockbuster. I didn't know that either. So I just sat down and wrote it, thinking maybe I can make a few pounds and settle my debts and then go back to journalism. That's what I thought. It didn't work out that way. Obviously, the Jackal became bigger than anybody, including the author, ever thought it would be. So, willy-nilly, I found myself, I'd changed professions. I didn't mean to.
You talk about being at Reuters, and you had an editorial desk job in London, and because you were able to speak French, you got an assignment, and this ultimately changed your career, not only in becoming a journalist and a correspondent, but also having a great influence in your writing life.
Well, it did, because it was the spring of 62, and in Paris, the events were unfolding, violent, and attempts to kill the president. He had given away Algeria to the Algerian nationalists. He'd been denounced as a traitor by the extreme right wing. I was sitting in London, and it just, again, the luck. I mentioned the luck several times. It wasn't lucky for the guy concerned, but the deputy head in the Paris office had a heart murmur. So they put him on the next plane back to London for medication, and a head came around the door and said, anybody here speak French? And I said, yeah, I do, which was true. I did and do. And they said, okay, well, you're on the evening plane to Paris. So I found myself at 23, first assignment ever, plunged into this very heady situation. Maybe France on the threshold of civil war if they assassinated the president. So that it was a life changer. But what an opportunity for a young foreign correspondent on first assignment.
What do you think there is the parallel that we can draw from you wanting to be a pilot, you wanting to fly, you wanting to be a part of what was going on. And then, of course, being a foreign correspondent who was sent to all of these hotspots and covering what was going on.
Well, that's the job. But yeah, I mean, after the Air Force, I'd have stayed on in the Air Force if they could have offered me a fighter squadron. It was the only thing I was going to settle for. But, of course, junior officers don't settle for what they do what they're damn well told. And I was told I would be flying a desk, maximum. So I said, no, I don't want to fly a desk. What is ambition number two? Ambition number two is to see the world. So I thought, how do you do that? Well, you become a foreign correspondent, and they send you to all these amazing places. So that's exactly what I did. I trained as a journalist and then got a job with Reuters, and they sent me to these extraordinary places. And this would have gone on, as far as I was concerned, at the end of my career, except for the phenomenon of writing The Day of the Jackal.
So here's the amazing thing about The Day of the Jackal. You wrote it in 35 days.
I was out of work. I was back from the Nigeria-Biafra war, and I hadn't got a job. I'd already resigned from the BBC. And so I had no money and no chance of employment, as I could see. I hadn't even got an apartment. I was sleeping on the sofa of a friend. And I just thought, well, what are you going to do? I know what I'll do. I'll write a novel. So when he went off to work days, I just sat at the kitchen table and took out my trusty little wafer-thin portable typewriter, which had accompanied me around the world. And I just started typing. Just rolled the first sheet in, and up it came. And I just closed my eyes and imagined the way it was in Paris 7 years earlier, and kept typing. And strangely enough, what is in the book today is exactly the first draft manuscript. It was never changed.
And without any experience of writing fiction, to have that happen is extraordinary, and especially since it is such a book. Do you look at it now? Do you see flaws that you would change now in the maturation process of a writer, or does it still look really good to you?
I'm not quite certain how others work. I mean, I know a few, like Ken Follett and Jeffrey Archer, and so, but we all work completely differently. I work the only way I can work, which is basically the way a journalist works, which is, a journalist, hopefully don't make it all up, but I prepare very, very carefully, very meticulously, over weeks, months even, doing the research, until finally every part of what I'm going to describe is going to be accurate, because I've researched it properly. So the story itself is fiction, but just about the whole of the background is not fiction. Whether it's special forces or Arab terrorism or espionage, anti-KGB, Soviet Union, all that sort of stuff, it was all researched very meticulously. So that part, at least, is true. Same with places, a city that I need to describe, I will go to and visit. Because there are things I'm going to discover in that city, just walking around even, that I'm not going to get on Google and I'm not going to get from a brochure. So it's got to be accurate. So if I say, hey, you turn that corner, street corner, and there's a cafe opposite, Chez André, you bet you're right. You go down that street and you will find Chez André. So that's that I take kind of weird pride in.
And to the question, though, about whether you feel you have, how do you feel that you have matured as a writer? When you look at The Day of the Jackal now, do you think you're a better writer now than you were then?
Oh, I don't know. Somebody else would have to make that. I don't know whether my style has changed. I think it's still basically journalistic style, which is keep it clear, keep it simple, keep it understandable, forget flowery words and flowery constructions. Just say, I had a chief reporter once who just said to me, tell it the way it was. And that's what I try and do. So probably it's much the same as it was back then. But you'd have to get a professor of etymology and say, here's the kill list, here's the jackal. You tell us how this prose style has changed, if it has changed at all.
Yeah.
It'd be too subjective for me to describe it.
So here's another way of asking the question, which is when you put in, as you mentioned with The Day of the Jackal, it was as written. It just, you wrote it and they published it. So when it came to the kill list, was there more editorial?
No. It's always been much the same. I've had about four different publishers. They're all very much the same. I send in the draft manuscript, which is the first. I don't do rewrites. And they have a team of bright young brains who start to go through it looking for flaws and inaccuracies. And maybe they come up with 100 points they want to raise. Is this true? We think that this was on a different day. We've checked this and is it spelled a different way, so on. We meet up, and that's the second time that I go through the text. And after that, I never read it again.
Meaning you never go back to your work and say, okay, let me look and see. I would like to read this and see how it reads now.
No, I don't do that. I mean, there was a quiz program on British TV some time ago. It's called The Mastermind. And one of the guys, the contestant, said his specialist subject was my work. So I thought, wow, I'll watch this and see you know, who's better, him or me. He just creamed me. He ran rings around me. He knew more about my stuff than I did.
So you said you felt that the kill list would be your swan song. And is fiction, is that still the plan, or would you like to write another novel?
No, I think that's probably it. It's up and over. In any case, the whole world is getting so technologically, for me anyway, complicated. I don't understand all the cyber technology of what the agents are doing, listening to millions and millions of phone calls and intercepting millions or even hundreds of billions of emails, and sorting out which one is a terrorist talking to a terrorist. And then if they do that, they can actually identify the guy and then isolate him and then locate him in cyberspace. And I don't know how they do it. So it's getting harder and harder. And I found that with the kill list. The drones, for example, which I dealt with, I had to spend a lot of time studying with experts how to explain to the lady in Peoria, you know, how the hell a drone works. But it is weird to think there's a guy sitting in Air Force Base Screech, Nevada, staring at a screen, and what he's looking down at is the Yemeni desert. That, to me, is pretty weird stuff. So I think probably the age has passed me by. I'm now 77. I'm perfectly happy to say no more. I've had enough. I'm going to do what old guys should do, which is walk the dogs and play with the grandkids.
Well, the new book is The Outsider, My Life in Intrigue. It is published by Putnam. Frederick Forsyth, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us. A delight and honor to speak with you. Thank you very much.
You're very kind. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Frederick Forsyth's new book is The Outsider, My Life in Intrigue. It's published by Putnam. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.